Normally, we celebrate Independence Day with fireworks, parades, big backyard barbecues, and other fanfare. But the coronavirus pandemic scrapped a lot of those fun traditions. Plus, the death of George Floyd and the protests and riots that followed make America's 244th birthday a little more somber. Our guest says this year it's all the more important to focus on what he calls the American contradiction. Kenneth C. Davis is a writer and historian. He's the author of Don't Know Much About History and other books in the Don't Know Much About series. His article, The American Contradiction, Conceived in Liberty, Born in Shackles, appeared in the March-April issue of Social Education. Ken, good to have you back with us today.
It is always a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me, Rob.
Ken, I know you think about the history of a lot of different American holidays and how they've changed over the years. I know you've been thinking a lot about Independence Day, the 4th of July, lately. Can you talk about just what's been on your mind?
Well, first of all, my book, Don't Know Much About History, came out 30 years ago. It's hard for me to believe it when I say that, but it's true. And the fact is that I've been talking for all of those 30 years, almost every year on the 4th of July, about what this document means in our history, the Declaration of Independence. But this year is different. It's different, first of all, because of the pandemic. We are reexamining everything we do in our lives, but it's also, including the way we celebrate holidays, but it's also different because, as you mentioned, we are in the midst of this great reckoning over race and slavery. And this goes back to what you just mentioned, the article I wrote called The Great Contradiction, that we are a nation conceived in liberty but born in shackles. And I think that this year, more than any time that I've talked about this in the past, it's a very real thing, obviously, because of the protests in the streets. A few years ago, I wrote a book called In the Shadow of Liberty. It's the story of five people who were enslaved by presidents, including Washington and Jefferson, the two icons of American independence in many ways. And the fact that these men were enslavers has been left out of our history books for most of our lives. And it is that contradiction that we are facing very clearly right now. And it came up again when the president spoke in front of the Mount Rushmore last week, this notion that we have two histories. For most of my life, one history was left out, and we are confronting that history right now.
I'll say, as a school kid growing up, I think to sum things up, I would say I got kind of a sidebar history of slavery. Like, here's the important stuff. Here's the presidents. Here's the wars. And oh, yeah, and slavery was going on at this time. And you and other historians have been making the case that we need to wrap the history of slavery in as a crucial part, a part you can't leave out of American history. Can you talk about how we can do that?
Well, we have to start with looking at the foundational documents. For instance, we're talking about the Declaration of Independence on the 4th of July. And this is a document with timeless verities. All men are created equal. We are all endowed with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are verities not only for Americans, but for all people. And they've been the most important thing that we do celebrate on the 4th of July. But in fact, Thomas Jefferson wrote a denunciation of slavery into his draft of the Declaration of Independence. It was removed. It was removed by men who owned slaves. It was removed by men who made a great deal of money transporting them. There was slavery in every one of the original 13 states. A little state like Rhode Island, the smallest state, had enormous wealth piled up by slave traders. Brown University a few years ago did a very deep dig into its history, the history of its founders and the men who endowed it as slavers. One of them was Stephen Hopkins, who is a signer of the Declaration of Independence. 40 of the 56 signers were enslavers. So it is wrapped up in our history. It comes back 11 years later when the Constitution is drafted in that same room in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787. And slavery was on the table. It was on the table constantly. And most of the large slaveholding states of the South, because some of the northern states had begun by then to move away from slavery, some of the large slaveholding states said they would just walk away from the table if slavery was not continued. It was not only continued, it was really cemented into the American system of government through something that we probably all learned about in sixth grade or maybe eighth grade called the Three-Fifths Compromise, which basically said that the enslaved population would be counted in the census to determine representation in Congress and hence to determine how many seats you had in the so-called Electoral College. What does that mean in reality? Well, it meant that Virginia, which was smaller than Massachusetts or Pennsylvania if you counted the white population, had the largest population when you included the enslaved population, even at three-fifths of a person. So Virginia gets the most seats in Congress, the most electors, and four of the first five presidents are slaveholders from Virginia. It's not a coincidence. So this is the fact that this institution, they called it the peculiar institution, was not a sideshow to our history. It was a central act in the American drama, and we haven't taught that for 200 years, properly at least. And now is the great reckoning.
We're talking to Ken Davis, author of the Don't Know Much About History series, looking at Independence Day in the United States, what it means, and why he says we need to look at the role of slavery in early American history a lot more closely than we do, say, or have done in our schools. Ken, something that's getting more attention this 4th of July than I think it has in years past is the speech by Frederick Douglass, What to a Slave is the 4th of July. Here's a quote from that in 1852. The rich inheritance of justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence bequeathed by your fathers is shared by you, not by me. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. And that's that two history concept you were talking about.
Absolutely. And of course, Frederick Douglass gave that address in 1852 in Rochester, New York. In the audience was the sitting president of the United States of America, Millard Fillmore. So this was pretty, talk about speaking truth to power. Fillmore, by the way, was the president who signed off on what became known as the Compromise of 1850. That was a series of compromises, actually, which allows certain states to come into the Union as either a slave state or a free state. And this was the great political argument of the day. It was really not a moral argument in 1850. It was really an argument about this political power that slavery endowed on the slaveholding states. And there was Millard Fillmore, and here's Frederick Douglass, a man who had escaped enslavement, a man who wrote about his master probably being his father, and how he had actually had a fight with that man at one point. Pretty dramatic stuff, the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass. And there he stands and gives this speech, which says that there's not a nation on earth that has a more bloody history. That is pretty strong stuff. And I was quite amazed. I've been talking and writing about Frederick Douglass's speech for quite a while. I was quite pleased and amazed to see how much attention it got this year.
We're looking at some of the truths, myths, and misconceptions about the founding of the U.S. and slavery's place in American history and how we teach about American history. Ken Davis is with us, author of the Don't Know Much About History series, among other books. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for Ken about the history? Do you have thoughts on who we should honor from America's past and how we should do it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jacob is with us in Madison. Jacob, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question for your guest, and forgive me if this was addressed already and I'm just tuning in, but how much was slavery a compromise in the founding of our nation? And what I mean by that is, it's my understanding that the slaveholding colonies wouldn't even come to the table and sit down to discuss forming a union, a new nation with the non-slaveholding colonies, if slavery was something that was on the table for discussion about whether or not it was going to be allowed or not. And so essentially, if slavery was up for discussion, the slaveholding colonies wouldn't even consider forming a union. And
Jacob,
so how much is that true?
Thanks a lot for the call. We started to touch on that. Ken, can you expand on that a little?
Yes, I'll quickly go back to that because I had mentioned, first of all of the 13 colonies were slaveholding, as I mentioned earlier. all 13 original states were slaveholding states. It was only Vermont, which comes in as the 14th state, that comes in as the first state without slaveholding. So this was absolutely part of the deal. And as I mentioned, Jefferson writes a stinging denunciation of slavery into the Declaration, his draft. It's removed by the Congress. Jefferson was not too happy about being edited in at any rate, but certainly wasn't happy about this. But again, gets to the heart of the contradiction. How does this man write a denunciation of slavery into this Declaration of Independence and go home to this plantation utterly dependent upon enslaved labor? And of course, in his case, it becomes even more complicated because he fathers children with an enslaved woman, Sally Hemings, of course. And at the Constitutional Convention, as I mentioned, in 1787, slavery is certainly on the table. And as the caller correctly mentions, some of those states by then were not slaveholding. Pennsylvania was the first to outlaw slavery in 1780. But this was an issue that was going to be a dividing point for these states, and they would not sign onto the Constitution without protection for slavery. Slavery is also protected because the federal government is committed to protecting the owners of the enslaved if there were runaways. Washington signs that into an actual law in 1793, the Fugitive Slave Act, which makes it a federal offense to assist a runaway. There was also a deal that there would be no laws made about slavery for 20 years from 1787, 1788 forward. And so the foreign slave trade is not ended until 1808. Many of those founders thought that the ending of the slave trade in 1808 would mean the end of slavery. It had almost the exact opposite effect because it increased the value of the enslaved population in the United States and made the production of slaves more valuable in a way as a homegrown product. I hate to say it, slave breeding became a very profitable enterprise in the first half of the 19th century in America.
I wanted to ask your thoughts, Ken, on who we memorialize. And this is something we're talking about a lot, obviously, with statues. If you get rid of Confederate leaders, do you have to reconsider, you know, George Washington because he owned slaves? Christine Emba, who wrote about this for The Washington Post, said, you know, the Confederate leader was known for one thing, the Civil War and secession. A George Washington or a Thomas Jefferson played huge, in some ways, in many ways, positive roles in American history. And they were slave owners. It's a little less cut and dry, she thought. What's your take?
I think it's a really important question that we should address. And in fact, I just wrote a piece on my own website, don'tknowmuch.com, about this called What Do We Do About George? Absolutely, the men who are the so-called heroes of the Confederacy, these generals for whom these statues went up, for the most part, during the 1920s or the 1950s, when they were put up as an expression of white supremacy during the civil rights era, these men were dedicated to a nation that was completely built upon slavery. They had betrayed their country. They had betrayed their oath of office. They were traitors to America. So I think that's an important distinction to make, because when we're talking about Washington and Jefferson in particular, we're talking about the men who built the nation. And the two of them were probably the two most indispensable men when we think about America's independence. Yet, I do think that we have a balancing act. For most of the past 200 years, these men were presented as perfect marble statues, Washington in particular. And I think that it's the historian's job to present that balance and to say, yes, he fought for liberty. He fought for America's independence while enslaving people, including enslaving people who tried to escape from his own plantation to the British during the war. So I think it's time that we have a really serious conversation. And I suggest in my article that maybe we should drape that pristine white marble statue or monument in Washington on the Mall with a Black Lives Matter banner and really have this conversation, which we've avoided. Realistically, I don't think we're going to do that right now, but it still seems to me to be a very, very appropriate thing that this country should acknowledge and have a reckoning with. Just as South Africa, after apartheid ended, had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to really examine its past, I think that it would be very healthy for this country to do something similar.
Do you think, I mean, this has been a long time coming, just very briefly, Ken, do you think we have it in us to have that discussion, that confrontation?
Certainly not right now, given the state of the political atmosphere and the commentary that we hear coming from the president in this case. I mean, this is as far from a realistic opportunity as we can possibly be. So perhaps, you know, if the political situation, the landscape changes sometime in the near future, perhaps we have that conversation. But we're having that conversation in the streets right now. And there's no question about that, that the Black Lives Matter movement in the wake of the death of George Floyd and others has completely changed the landscape in a stunning way.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Ken Davis for being back with us, author and historian, author of Don't Know Much About History and much more. We talked to him about the history of Independence Day.